This is Cynthia Ganoff, and you are listening to the Mesmerized Podcast. Hey guys, welcome. I'm glad you're here today. I wanted to share a quick little something that happened this week in my life. I hope it encourages you, but it also ties in today's podcast. I am at the point in this book publishing process where I need endorsements, and I think endorsements may be the worst part of book writing. And I know that book writing is a privilege and it's a joy, and I'm thankful for the opportunities, but I don't find the endorsement process a joy or a privilege. I mean, you're asking someone to say, yeah, I love this book and I think you should read it too. And you're asking people, preferably that have a platform, people that will convince others to read it. And so it's a big ask, because especially in the Christian nonfiction world, that person has to read the book and make sure their beliefs line up with yours and that they actually like the book, all the things. So I sent out emails weeks ago, and I kind of tailored each one and tried to make them funny and ingratiating and all the things, but just saying, like, really, I would be so honored if you'd consider doing this. And so time passes, nothing, crickets. I'm like, oh my goodness. So last week I was praying one morning, and y'all know I've mentioned this, I'm praying through Mark Batterson's Devo, Circle Maker, and I'm praying circles around some things in my life right now. But after I finished that, I just started praying about just this endorsement process. And I was like, Lord, like, here's the fish and loaves. Like, I wrote the book. I don't know what else I can do. And so I was kind of angry and frustrated and all the things, grumpy about it. And later that day, I got not one, but two emails that were responded to, people saying yes to endorsing the book. And so I have all three that I need now, but I'm thrilled with all three, but there's one in particular that was kind of a reach. I'm like, this person will never say yes, but this is a person who has impacted my faith for so many years. And just to get a yes there, it was just the Lord reminding me that he's in the details and that we need to ask. And Mark Batterson talks a lot in this Devo I'm going through, is just pray specifically for things, because then when it happens, then you can say that was all God. Like, there's no taking credit for any of that. And that's what I saw this week. Like, it's all God. And so I just want to encourage you in that, to keep praying and circling around the things that are going on in life, even if it seems kind of minutia. I mean, it was minutia for me to be consumed with endorsements, but had to be done at some point. And so it was just an answer to prayer. And I have this group of girls that I Marco Polo with, and we just send, like, you know, video messages on Marco Polo, and someone every week, one of us says, like, God is in the details. We're reminded of that. And I saw this week that God is in the details. And that's what today's show reminds us too. And I cannot wait for you to hear from Yusuf Ogoro. And he is a pastor at my daughter's church in Austin, The Well. And he grew up with a Muslim faith. And this is his story of how the Lord pursued him. And he's now a Christian, a pastor at a church in Austin, and speaks to college kids and makes such a difference in their lives. I knew it firsthand from my daughter, but he talks just about how the Lord spoke to him and how he came to faith. And you're able to see just how he's always pursuing us and he is in the details. And I think we know that, and we see it all throughout the Bible when we study characters in the Bible, but this is just a modern day person that the Lord just chased after them. And he's chasing after you and he's chasing after me. And I just hope this encourages you. We do end our conversation by talking about, what is it that high school, college kids, like these young adults, like, what is it that they are grappling with in faith? So we're going to start with that question. And then next week will be part two of this conversation. And we're talking all about these young adults, college kids, high school kids, and their faith journey and what he knows from spending so much time in college ministry and in a college campus. And so it's 2 weeks with Yusuf, and you will not regret the next few minutes you spend listening to this. So take a few minutes, pray about it, ask the Lord to remind you that he's in the details, and whatever it is that you're struggling with, just surrender that to him. I hope that's an encouragement to you today, because he's there for us and the Lord wants to answer those prayers. And sometimes it's a no, and sometimes it doesn't look like we want to, and most often it doesn't happen in the timeline we need it to, but he is faithful. And so listen today, part one of our conversation with Yusuf. Here we go. Yusuf, welcome to Mesmerized. How are you?
Hello. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I mean, I'm good. I'm so glad we're together. Finally, we've been trying to make this happen, and you keep like having life events. Like, I mean, we're having babies, we're moving, like you're in that stage of life, right?
Yeah, 100%. We're in the thick of it, but the fog is starting to clear just a bit. So yeah.
How old are your kids now?
So Rose, our oldest daughter, just turned 4 this past Monday. And then Shiloh, he is actually 6 weeks old yesterday. So yeah, we're making it.
Yeah.
But it's been good.
I do chuckle that you're doing this from a coffee shop because you don't know if you can gain silence anywhere else. And we've all lived there, my friends. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for doing this. And a little background, everyone, is Yusuf is the college minister at The Well. Am I right? Is that college?
Yeah. Right? So actually, you know, what's so interesting is probably since you and I have talked, I became the associate pastor.
Congrats.
I guess January. Yeah. So January is when I kind of stepped fully into that role, but I still have one foot on the college campus. I really begged to make that happen. I was like, guys, I don't know if I'm fully ready to, you know, say goodbye to not doing what I feel like is the best part of my job and getting to be on UT and connecting with students. So I still have one foot in there. I still oversee the college ministry. Like, I still have directional strategic oversight, but we have a solid college team that really helps kind of run the day-to-day things so that I can focus on other things. So
associate pastor at The Well, which is a church in Austin, Texas, which is where my daughter has been attending since she went to UT. And I've said this on the podcast before. I think I've told you this as well, Yusuf, but I don't know if I've ever been at that church on a Sunday where I haven't cried. And I'm not a huge crier, but every time I go and just see all these kids from the University of Texas and other places, but just worshiping the Lord with everything they have in an environment where it's not cool. It's not popular to have a strong religious faith at their school. And I just, every time I'm just like tear up and think of like how good the Lord has been to have you guys in my daughter's life and to have that church and to have a church that's making such impact with high achieving young adults that hopefully will do amazing things in the world, and they're getting just grounded in the Lord. So anyway, a huge thank you from the Yanoff family. It's been so meaningful. But Kate told me I had to podcast you because she heard you speak at something, and we're going to get to that. She heard you speak at a UT, an event at UT called Revive Texas, and it was about church hurt, and she could not stop talking about that. And it was so interesting to me that that's a topic that you would speak on to college kids, because I feel like, you know, it's like in your adulthood somewhere where you really start getting the church hurt. But I wanted to know more. But this is the funny part, Yusuf. Before we even got there, I ran across a podcast that you were on, and I heard all about your kind of backstory and your Muslim background. Did my daughter ever mention any of that? I'm like, no, I know you're laughing over there. And I'm like, girl, that's the story behind the story. You have the most incredible testimony of coming to the Lord. So is it fair game if we start there for a minute and talk about your background and what got you to ministry?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Yeah. Well, okay. So tell us just a little about growing up in faith and did that click with you as a kid growing up in a Muslim family?
Yeah. So you beat me to it. I was raised in a devout Muslim family. And I say devout because my parents, you know, they really took our faith seriously. And I say this, you know, Islam wasn't just a religion in our family. It was the glue that held us together. Every one of my family members was a devout Muslim as well. It's the first thing we would do when we were visiting family. We would pray 5 times a day. I was taught to read the Quran and to write Arabic and to, you know, to by 5th grade, I was leading my family in you know, Islamic prayers. And so, yeah.
Where did you live? Did I ask that? Where did you live?
So I grew up in, so this is going to get a little, you know, stay with me here, but yeah. So my parents moved from Nigeria to London when my mom was pregnant with me, had me in London, and then 6 years later moved to the US, to Houston, which is like the Nigerian capital of, you know, like, of not just Texas, but the U.S. A lot of Nigerians are great Nigerian community.
Okay.
And we grew up, and so I lived in Aleve, Texas, but then moved to Katy, West Texas, when I was like in elementary, and then from grew up there before I went to college. So,
okay.
So yeah.
So you have this devout, faith in your family. And were you, without sounding callous about it, but were you bought in? Like, I mean, when you grow up with it, is it, it's all, you know, I mean, did you buy into that and that truth for your own life growing up, or were you influenced by others around you from school, other places? Like, what'd that look like?
I think it's a great question. At a young age, my parents made sure to really raise us up in Islam, and to also, like, in some ways try and teach us about other people's perspective, but always give us kind of the Islamic view on things. And so that it wasn't the only view I know, but I definitely was bought into it at a young age. But I was also a really deep kid. So by fifth grade, I just started to realize, man, you know, it is such a ritualistic religion. You pray 5 times a day. There's a cleaning ritual called ablution that you do, you know, before every single prayer. You know, it's very, very workspace. So by fifth grade, I'm like, man, I'm doing a lot of stuff. And yet I don't really feel like God loves me or Allah loves me, right? Allah is God in Islam. And so, you know, was I bought in? Yes. But then also at a young age, I realized, you know, I'm told that Allah loves me, but I don't necessarily feel it, and just kind of came to that conclusion at a young age.
I have the benefit of hearing your story on a different podcast, so I know that there's a boy named Daniel, and we're not talking the biblical Daniel, guys. Tell us a little bit about Daniel in fifth grade.
So Daniel and I became best friends. I had just moved to a house in Katy, and he had actually just moved onto that same street not too long prior either. And I had just bought the skateboard. Like, my dad and I were getting back from academy, and we were unboxing a skateboard that he had bought. And as I'm unboxing the skateboard, I literally see Daniel skateboarding down the street, and he's a beast, right? Like, he's doing kickflips and all sorts of stuff. And so as a fifth grader, like, my mind is just absolutely blown, and, you know, and so I engage him, and he's the friendliest dude ever. And before you know it, like, me and him are just skating together and talking, you know, and just become best friends, very easy. And Daniel, actually, shortly after we become friends, he becomes a Christian. And he has a really cool testimony too. But, you know, he begins to tell me about Jesus, share the gospel with me. And because we are so close relationally, it always felt very conversational. It never felt like he was just always like, all of a sudden it was, now I was his project to convert. But because it was conversational, I just naturally had questions, and he would naturally give his best shot at answers, to where over time I felt like I developed a pretty solid, just overarching view, a general understanding of just some of the general and basic beliefs about Christianity, just from our conversations and the questions and answers. But the one thing that with Daniel, the one thing that he would always emphasize about the Christian faith that I didn't understand was that Jesus died on the cross for our sins, right? He would share that. And I just was like, that doesn't make any sense to me. And there's a lot of reasons why, but ultimately Muslims believe that Jesus is just the prophet, right? And so just no category for, like, you know, for this idea that Jesus died on the cross for our sins and the significance of that. So he really, I think, planted the initial seeds of, like, really hearing about Christianity from a Christian's perspective, and then wrestling with some of the fundamental, you know, beliefs about Christianity.
Yeah. But then it wasn't until, like, you by no means at that point had made any sort of decision or anything. It wasn't until high school that it kind of started to click. Is that right?
Yeah. So it's interesting. So my whole journey throughout junior high, I would say I was definitely an agnostic. Like, I believe that God existed, but I didn't really know if Allah was, you know, I just didn't believe that Allah loved me. I just felt like Islam was more just a ritualistic thing to do. And of course, I wasn't going to tell my devout Muslim family that, like, I was struggling to really believe, you know, that Allah is real and that he really loved me. So I was always going through the motions of a Muslim, but in my heart, I was wrestling and was more of an agnostic. So when Daniel tells me, hey, Jesus died on the cross for your sins, I'm really processing that. But because I don't understand that, I'm like, I'm not going to be a Christian if I don't understand what is apparently, you know, like, one of the most important things to believe. And because I felt like so much of Islam was a little meaningless, like it lacked meaning, I was just doing it. To me, it didn't make sense to hop into Christianity if I didn't truly understand, you know, the meaning of it either. So I was kind of stuck in limbo. And then in eighth grade, around that time, Daniel shows me Passion of the Christ. And his heart was pure. Like, man, Yusuf doesn't understand the cross. I think showing him a very brutal, bloody, gory movie.
Right.
You know,
yeah. If anything's going to get him, it's going to be Passion of the Cross.
Yeah,
folks.
Exactly. And so, yeah, so he shows me Passion of the Christ, and I didn't get it. And if anything, I'm very squeamish, and blood and I are just, I don't do blood at all. And so I remember a scene in the movie where Jesus's ribs are exposed as he's being beaten. And I'm just
in Passion
like,
of the Christ, I forgot. Yeah. It's been a long time.
Oh,
okay.
My gosh. And then Daniel, at the end of the movie, is like tearing up. And, you know, he's like super emotionally invested. And he looks at me. He's like, bro, do you feel like a tug on your heart? And I'm like, no. Why did you show me this?
That's
right?
Horrible.
This is gross. You know, and I I said it to say that it was at that point that I was like, okay, my man just swung for the fence. This is like the grand slam of the Christian faith. And if I still don't get it, then maybe I'm just not meant to be a Christian. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I just was like, okay, you know, I'm just going to be a good person. I'll go through the motions of a Muslim, but in my heart, I'm agnostic. I know I'm not meant to be a Christian. It's okay. So then it's not until 2 years later that things really clicked for me. And, it's the moment that I gave my life to Christ. It actually... you know, it was an experience that I had. It was like 2 a.m. in the morning. I was the only one up on my desktop computer. It's my family's asleep. Everyone's asleep. All the lights in the house are off. The computer is the only thing giving light in the room. I was on Facebook wishing everyone a happy birthday. And I tell Gen Zers that and they're like, what? Like, what?
They're like, Facebook.
Wait,
happy
Facebook.
Birthday.
Happy birthday. Like, what? Like,
are you a mom? Why
you know,
are you on Facebook?
Exactly. And I'm like, listen, you guys have no idea. Like, that was the thing to do. Like, that's how you really cared for your friends, was, you know, making sure that, yeah. So, anyways, so it's time to get off the computer. I turn it off. It's pitch black. I can't even tell if my eyes are open or closed. It's so dark. I'm just relying on muscle memory to get back to my room and go to bed. And on my way to my room, I stop and I hear God speak to me, right? And it, the best way to describe it is like these thoughts that were not my own thoughts, right? And the first thing I hear is, do you love your family? That's the question that I'm asked. And I begin to engage, you know, with these thoughts and begin to dialogue in my own head back and forth. And I say, yes, I love my family. He says, okay, well, take your mom, your dad, take your entire family, your sisters, your brother. You love them, right? She says, well, according to Islam and Christianity, there's something wrong with them in regards to when it comes to their relationship with God. They are separate from God. Both religions would say that, you know, mankind is separate from their maker. Where they differ is how you are reconciled to God. Right. In Islam, you do more good than bad. And on the day of judgment, God is going to weigh your deeds, right? Your good and bad deeds. And if your good outweighs your bad, you'll go to heaven. If not, you go to hell. Whereas in Christianity, it's like, hey, this is not a works-based faith, right? It's God's grace that allows us, restoration.
We're good. What's happening over there?
What's happening is I don't realize how loud I'm being. And we've got some people over here that are amening. And, you know, like, we agree. It's my noise cancellation headphones.
I mean, we're just giving... these people need Jesus. It's fine. Okay, Yusuf?
Yeah.
We're getting the job done over here.
Well, they're over here praying. So I'm like, they might already have Jesus. He was just like,
or they're praying for you. They're like, we can't figure out how this ends.
Yeah,
is he
exactly.
going to come to Jesus or not?
I know. So anyways, I'm dialoguing with God, right? And according to both religions, mankind is separate. Your parents are separate. This family that you love is separate from God, but you love them, right? Okay. Well, would you go through everything you saw in that movie 2 years prior right? So that they wouldn't have to live or die separate from God. This is the dialogue that I'm having.
Really? And it brings back up Passion of the Christ.
Exactly.
Like, that's what God's speaking to you. Huh.
Exactly. Okay. So it's like a replay of this mm-hmm. movie that, mind you, I did not think twice about. I mean, I couldn't wait to,
yeah.
I couldn't wait for it to be done. And, you know, like, and I'm re-envisioning, like replaying all of the scenes from Passion of the Christ in my head. Right. Huh. And the background question, the question that's being played in the background is, would you go through all of this so that yeah. your family wouldn't die separate from God? And just like that, it was vivid, right? Would you be mm-hmm. marred beyond recognition, brutally tortured, crown of thorns beaten into your head, hands and feet pierced, bones dislocated, all of it? Would you suffocate to death on a cross so that your parents wouldn't die separate from God? And I just had a very honest moment with myself and came to the conclusion that as much as I love my family, I don't know if yeah. I could do that no. for them. You know?
Yeah, fair.
Mm-hmm. But that's when it clicked. That's when it clicked. It was almost as if God was saying, Yusuf, you have been searching for so long for this kind of tangible thing to point to show that God loves you, that you can experience his love. But the reality is what you're looking for is not found in Islam. It's mm-hmm. not found. It's only found in the cross, where you can actually see and experience the very real, tangible love of God. This is not just some doctrine, right? Some mm-hmm. isolated event in history. This is a moment in history where God actually displays his love for mankind and his love for you, Yusuf, that though you deserve to spend eternity apart from him, he sent his son to die on your behalf. So wow. it was that moment that I experienced God's love for the first time. Wow. And that was the night that I gave my life to Jesus.
Wow. So.
Friends, I am so excited to introduce you to a company that you may not know about. And if you don't, it's time you do, Mr. Penn. All right. I'm talking specifically about Bible Journaling Supplies, and they have the best on the market. They have everything from journaling kits to journaling Bibles to no-bleed Bible pens and highlighters. And let me tell you something, that's critical, right? If you want to write in your Bible, that's what I love about it. If I want to write in my Bible, take notes, journal, like they have all the things you need in order to write on those thin pages and not have it bleed through. I think that's my favorite thing. But you know what else I love? I love that it was started by a Christian teacher in Louisiana, and they have 100,000 five-star reviews on Amazon. Are you kidding me? 100,000. And so they offer custom products for churches, schools, conferences, and you get your money back if you don't like any of the products. And so you guys, seriously, shop the best Bible journaling supplies on the market. And remember, they're fantastic gifts for your friends, all the ladies in our lives at MrPen.com. That's where you shop at MrPen.com. That's MrPen.com. And guess what? Our audience gets a special discount. Yes, we do. Use the code MESMERIZE10. Again, MESMERIZE10, two S's in MESMERIZE, at checkout to get a 10% discount on your entire order.
And so there you are in a dark, quiet moment, just mm-hmm. you and the Lord, and mm-hmm. you accepted him. And mm-hmm. I think there's two things that I just think are just great takeaways as believers. I think one, the reminder of how the Lord pursues us. Mm-hmm. And yours is such an obvious, it's so obvious how he's pursuing you, like through the streets you live on and, mm-hmm. and a kid that, I mean, totally. My goodness, a kid that's willing to go all out. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm raising three kids and I'm like, how do you raise that kid? Like, how do I get a Daniel? Like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
But just
yeah.
the way the Lord was pursuing you and even, yeah. you know, this movie and then all these years later and you turn off a computer from antiquated, outdated middle-aged mom Facebook. And then the Lord's like, okay, we're just going to do this here and now. And
I think it's
a reminder to all of us that
yeah.
we are actively being pursued by the Lord
yep.
From the beginning to the end of our days.
Yep.
And so are our kids. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, what a relief that is
uh-huh.
that like, it's not about us at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And the second point in that is like, Daniel did what he knew to do, mm-hmm. was faithful, and mm-hmm. he didn't see the instant results of that. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. he saw a guy that was like, gross, what was that about? Why'd you show, right? Like, yeah. and yet yeah. the Lord used that. And so, like, just that reminder that we all know academically, but we're here to plant seeds, uh-huh. and, like, the Lord cultivates.
Totally.
And I just think totally. That's such a reminder in parenting, too. Like, just, yep. we're planting seeds. Yep. Our job is not... we're not the harvesters at the end of the day. Like, the yep. Lord decides and yep. timing. And so absolutely. Anyway, your stories, I mean, it's so
and Cynthia, let me tell you, I often have to be reminded of this. My own story is often what God will point me to, because it's mm-hmm. so easy to get discouraged when you don't see the immediate fruit. But what seems like a moment, and of course, in the moment, I have no idea, you know, that there have been multiple seeds planted that lead to this moment. In the moment, it just felt like, oh my gosh, the heavens opened and God just spoke to me. And it's not until, like, you know, after that I'm like, oh yeah, like this didn't just start. And, you know, yeah. in my living room as a mm-hmm. sophomore in high school, this was, man, like what, like my parents moving to London and then to Houston and mm-hmm. then to mm-hmm. Katy. And then just so happens that God was moving in this other non-believer at the time's life to move him mm-hmm. from Miami to Florida. And mm-hmm. then someone's going to speak the gospel to Daniel in one of his classes in high school and get him plugged into a church. And that's going to spill over into God's pursuit of me. And Daniel's going to share the gospel with me, but it's not going to be until 3 or so years later, you know, that it's finally going to cook for me. And in between is just seed after seed after seed. So it's very encouraging for me, especially when it comes to my family, who yeah. they're not believers. And, you know, they, yeah. And it's one of my biggest prayers is that I would get to baptize mm-hmm. one of my family members. And it can be very discouraging when you see them actually become more and more fortified in their, faith in Islam. You know, it just becomes very discouraging. But
the ripple effect of, like you were saying, from a move from all these places to a Daniel to you accepting the Lord to, like, I mean, I'm looking at all the different pieces to all the way fast forward to you and I are intersecting because the impact you're having on my daughter's life. My daughter is in your church and got to baptize mm-hmm. some mm-hmm. young lives, girls mm-hmm. like that amazing. Now know the Lord, that are raising kids. Like, you mm-hmm. just
come
like
on.
The power of the Lord and that yeah. ripple effect is incredible. And yeah. so let's just hit on this, and then we're gonna talk about college kids in a minute and just okay. kids in general. But
okay.
Your family, so no one's a believer at this point. How did you tell them? Tell us a little bit about that story.
So it's hilarious because I knew the moment that I laid my head on my pillow that night and gave my life to Jesus, I knew that my parents could never find out about this.
Yeah.
I mean, I was yeah. so afraid. I was so afraid to tell them. And so I made an inner vow very early on in my faith that I'm just going to continue going through the motions with them. But maybe I think I tried to pinpoint, like, when would be a good age to tell them. And I was 15 at the time. And I was like, you know what? 30 seems like a great age.
30.
I'm going to wait 15 years, you know? And then by that
How point, old are you I'm, now, by the way?
I'm 30, turning 33 this year. So,
okay. Yeah. So in your yeah. mind, it was going to be like,
in
about
my
now.
Mind, I'd honestly, yeah. I honestly could see a future where it was like, once I get to 30 to be like, let's give it another 15 years, you know?
Yeah, right.
So
45 60,
sounds yeah. good, you know? So, so anyways, yeah. So that was kind of the plan, but through a crazy series of events, I lasted 2 years. So for the rest of high school, I was, hiding my faith from my family, you know, hiding my Bible.
Are you still doing things. The prayers 5 times? Are you doing yep. all the ritualistic
I'm doing all the ritualistic prayers, all the, but, no. but in my heart, I'm praying to Jesus. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I know, like, I know who my God is, but mm-hmm. on the surface, you know, they couldn't tell the difference. And now that I've talked to them about this stuff, like, now, you know, years later, over a decade later, my mom says she saw a change in me. Like, she could tell mm-hmm. that she was, like, two things were happening, that she could tell that I was a little less bought into Islam, but then also there were a lot of behavioral challenges that I had before coming a Christian that were starting to subside. So she wow. saw, like, she, you know, it was this weird thing that she was processing. So anyways, so yes, I all throughout high school, I snuck out to youth group like twice. You know, I just was hiding my faith. In college, through a crazy series of events, I feel like God calls me to apply for Pine Cove. Pine Cove is a Christian camp in East Texas. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. And, you know, there's a guy named Broflex who comes up to me at my college ministry. He's like, man, I really want you to apply. And I just know in my mind, like, there's no way that's going to happen because I don't have a car and my parents are for sure going to ask where I'm going for the summer and how am I going to hide that from them. But I tell Broflex, you know, if God leads me, I'll go, having no intention to actually ever go. And lo and behold, God leads me to apply. And ultimately, I'm offered the job. And, you know, in my mind, I know that's just phase one. Phase two is having to convince Andrew Bacon at the time, Bunga, to lie to my parents. And he was the director of Shores. He's like, hey, you know, you have the job. And I tell him, hey, that's great. Can you lie to my parents and tell them, because they're for sure going to call you and ask what this is all about. Can you tell them that it's just a kids camp? Like, just leave out the Christian camp, you know, like, and he's like, no,
yeah.
He's like, not a chance. Yeah. And he's like, my job's on the line, bro. I'm not going to lie. I'm just kidding. But he's just like, yeah. Hey, actually, I need this position filled by today. So you have until like 6 p.m. to tell your parents that you're a Christian and that you're coming to this camp. And then you need to let me know, like, hey, you know, are you coming or are you not coming? Right. So, or I think that's what he said. Like, you have till 6 p.m. to tell me today and encourage me to tell my family.
Okay.
So yeah, long story short, I sent my dad a text message. Right. It was the bravest thing I could do was shoot him a text. And
wait, text like we should get together or a text like
a text,
hey,
like,
I'm a Christian.
Hey,
thumbs up.
Like, I really tried to slow play, like, hey, there's this camp that I'm going to and blah, blah, blah. And my dad's like, you don't have my permission to go because he can see that it's a Christian camp. And it's just through like a text exchange that I slowly and painfully lay out that I am a Christian.
Okay.
And so it was really, really, that was how I told them. So.
Yeah. And to date, you still, they're not believers, but you have a good relationship with your family. How does that work?
Yes. Yeah. So yeah. I will say this, right? Culturally, in different parts of the world, like, you can lose your life for, you know, in Muslim countries, you can lose your life for becoming Christian. I never at any point felt like my life was actually physically in danger. But there was just a lot of relational turmoil in my house. There was no peace. It was, you know, like a lot of emotional outrages and a lot of, you know, my family gathering together and trying to have an intervention with me and bringing my uncle into things. And, you know, it just, for, I would say about 3 to 4 years, it just, you know, being at home was like walking on eggshells, and there was just a lot of relational turmoil. So I could go on and on about that, but I would say, probably 4 years in, 4 years in is when, 3 or 4 years in is when things started to subside a little bit. And my parents realized this isn't just some sort of phase or fad. They began to see the fruit of, you know, of my life and that I took faith seriously. And I think a part of them was like, you know, our son could be doing a lot of other things, you know, especially in college.
Yeah.
So trying to be a man of faith and taking that seriously, I think to some degree they grew thankful for that and tried to kind of help make amends there. So, and then fast forward over 10 years, you know, we are very, very close. My family loves me. They love my family. Oh, get this. I wasn't planning on sharing this, but, you know, at one point, it was spring of 2012 is when I got baptized, and Daniel and the guy that discipled me in college, my college pastor, Joel Lowry, incredible, also married me and my wife. They both baptized me, and I felt like God was telling me to invite my family to that. And my dad was like, we will never come to your church. Right. And of course I knew he was going to say that. I don't know why God asked me to do that. But fast forward, let's see, when was this? I think this was fall of 2023. Is when we dedicated our daughter at church and my entire family was there. It was the first time that my family had come to church with me. And then I got ordained this year, and then they were there for that. It was the second time.
Wow.
So, you know, fast forward once again, over 10 years, even that inner vow that will never, ever. How dare you ask us, right? Mm-hmm. And the Lord's softened their heart enough to where, yes, they're devout Muslims, but they came to church. So,
wow. We say that about our kids. We have a lot of non-believers in our family, and they will not come to things that we've requested, but they will for our kids' things. And we always call them our little disciples, our little missionaries.
Totally.
So, yeah, the kids, yeah. Okay, fast forward us into working with young adults.
Yeah.
You obviously got a call into ministry. Mm-hmm. Did were you always planning on going into ministry, like, since you accepted the Lord, or is that kind of a
absolutely change of path? Not. Absolutely yeah. not. No. And but other people would always speak that over me. When I got to college, you know, one person hears of me, you know, being a former Muslim, and that begins to spread. And now all the ministries want me to come and share my testimony. Mm-hmm. So I got to speak quite a bit as a freshman and sophomore, all throughout college, really. And just very quickly, people would say, hey, you should consider, mm-hmm. you know, a future in full time ministry. And
where'd you go to college?
I went to Texas State in San Marcos. I wanted to be an electrical engineer. I really found a passion for that soon after, you know, getting into college. And I had seen people in the church, you know, do a really good job of serving the church as young professionals, or as, you know, professionals with families and pouring into the next generations. I envisioned that for my life. And so when people would say, hey, you know, you should go into ministry, I was like, I think you should actually just mind your own business and you do what God's calling you to do. And I'm going to do what God's calling me to do, which is I'm going to be an engineer and serve the church faithfully. So that was my plan. And then I did that, you know, graduated, got a job in Dallas, working for Texas Instruments as an electrical engineer. It was amazing. And then, you know, a couple years into that, really felt the Lord through another crazy series of events. But the Lord called me into full-time ministry, and then made it very painfully obvious, as much as I was slow playing it. I get a call from a good friend of mine, Adam Watson, who was on staff at The Well. And he's like, hey, man, you know, I had known Adam for 10 years. He's one of my mm-hmm. best friends. And he's like, hey, dude, I know I've been asking you to be in ministry with me since we've known each other, but we're about to open this college director position, and I want you to pray about it. And I tell him no at first, only to feel convicted and come back around and eventually end up taking the job. So, yeah.
So cool. So I just want to say, this is the only time, listeners, you're going to have a podcast with a guy that went from Muslim to Christian to engineer to college minister to associate pastor. Whatever your kid's doing that you're like, I don't think that's the right, like, God will get them where they need to be,
totally.
Everybody. Like,
100%. Literally. And get this, what's crazy about that is when I first started school, I was undecided. Right? I had no idea. Yeah. And what's hilarious about that is in Nigerian culture, like, really, you're conditioned as a kid. Like, you have three career paths, right? Doctor, lawyer, engineer. Everybody in your family is like, you know, is trying to convince you of that. So when I tell my parents that I'm undecided going into college, you would have thought I told them that I just killed a neighborhood of people. Like, they were like, oh, what? And you
this
know,
has to be the Christian thing.
Yeah, what's exactly. Happening? Like, look at your son. He doesn't know what he wants to do with his life. And I'm just like, wait, what? You know, So
that's crazy.
It's
talk
it's
to us
totally
about
cool.
college kids. And when we're talking about college kids, I think this really applies to high school. I think it just applies to this generation of kids, working with them for so long. What are they grappling with faith-wise?
Man, okay, I think this is a great question. I think ultimately, though the struggles of kind of this generation of college students may manifest differently, right? Look different, kind of maybe even have a veneer that is unique to them. I think the root of it is similar to what every generation has faced, you know, in terms of like faith conflict, really since Adam and Eve. And that is, man, really struggling to trust. Is God really all that good, right? Is he worth surrendering my entire life to? And that can manifest differently. Is that worth surrendering my sexuality to, right? Is that worth surrendering my you know, my career choice and my future and how I spend my time and how I spend my money and, you know, who are the people that I choose to minister to, but who are the people that I'm choosing to actually, like, really, like, join forces with? Is God good enough to influence every single aspect and area of my life? That's the struggle. And I think especially in college, you know, you have people from a variety of different backgrounds. But I think for people that have grown up in the faith, they've always been told, hey, that, you know, what the world offers doesn't really satisfy. But then they get to college and every single temptation known to man is thrown at them, and not just thrown at them. It's clothed, right, in this, you know, in a very, very shiny and attractive exterior. And so they have a decision to make. And, you know, oftentimes students, even though they've been told, hey, this is not going to satisfy, it's going to leave you broken, they may be bought into that in high school and junior high and have always been kind of, you know, sheltered. But then they're just like, man, it's like Adam and Eve again with the apple. Like, man, that fruit looks real, real, real good. And so they take a bite and often have to experience the brokenness.
All right. So, yes, that was a touch of an awkward stop, mostly because he was in a coffee shop and it got really loud. So part two of a conversation, he is back in his house and there's no other noise. But we are going to talk, like I said, all about young adults, our college kids, our high school kids. What is it with faith that they're grappling with? What works? What doesn't work when we're talking faith with them? And it's a really, really insightful conversation. And you will fall even more in love with Yusuf because he's just an amazing guy. So tune back in. And then do me a favor. If you enjoyed this day, will you please take a minute and share it with someone? I would love that.